All right, so before we get started, I wanted to give a shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based out of Los Angeles. I was just there. You might remember that she guest hosted the podcast in January and actually came on live with me back in August of 2021. Jeannie facilitates breath work to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and decrease pain. Having trouble calming the monkey mind? She's your gal. It's not about controlling or managing your stress or thoughts. Instead, it's about shifting and improving the relationship that you have with them. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely and is obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. If you want to experience a full-length breathwork class with Jeannie and her incredible community, she's offering her next online breathwork course for free just for the Mind and Fitness community, so just for you, the listeners. The link to register to her class, which is Sunday, March 27th, again, my birthday, you'll find it in the show notes. And just use the promo code MINDANDFITNESS. That's MINDANDFITNESS, no spaces, Mind and Fitness, to register for free. Replays will be sent out if you can't attend live. And I would say to definitely check this out. Now, if you listen to that episode back in January that she did, it was a breathwork session. And it was amazing. It was the first one that I've done. And we were supposed, it's actually kind of wild because her and I were supposed to do a live one for the listeners way back in March of 2020. And then the world turned upside down. And so quite a bit has changed since then. So register for this, go and check it out. If you can make it live, that would be awesome. So again, it's in the show notes. The promo code is Mind and Fitness, and you'll be able to register for free. I'm back from vacation. Welcome to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to make sure that I give a shout out to the patrons of the show. Go to patreon.com/themindandfitnesspodcast if you're interested in supporting the podcast monetarily. I'm going to go all the way back to the original two supporters of the show, which is Barb and Arnie. They actually signed up on back-to-back days back on November 16th and November 17th of 2018, which is just crazy. You two are amazing. Thank you. So in addition to Barb and Arnie, Brian, Julie, Ross, Christina, Jen, and Nate, Anthony, Michael, Tony, Kelly, Irina, Mindy, Jason, Brooke, John, James, Sylvie, Sasha, Dominic, Enda, Elise, and Amanda, thank you all so much for continuing to support the podcast. Keeps the lights on, makes this a little bit more than just a labor of love, helps pay the publishing fees, equipment, all that kind of stuff. So thank you so much. Now, if you've been following me on social media, if you follow me personally, if we're friends or if we're connected, it's been a rough few days. So I played that episode a couple of weeks ago where I spoke with Douglas Gafrida's class at the University of Rochester, his PhD class or his graduate school class, and I talked about my dog Barkley. So this isn't going to be like your traditional like TMS podcast, and it's I don't think it's going to be a copy of the one that I did about my dog who we put down in 2019, Dickie. That was October of 2019, and I was just I hadn't grieved at all because he still had two more days left before we were going to put him down. And I went back and re-listened to that on Sunday, and I was just a blubbering mess through the whole thing. So I'm going to do my best for this one to just kind of tell the story of how the last couple of weeks have gone. So it was probably 4 or 5 weeks ago that my 13-year-old pug, Barkley, now he's had health issues over the last couple of years, mostly just with his spine. He's had some severe degeneration in the lower part of his spine that you could tell he had just very, very droopy in the back, and he kind of had this kyphosis going on in his mid-back, almost looked like a camel as time went on. But it was causing a lot of weakness in his back legs. So it started probably a year and a half ago with him dragging his paws when he would walk, and he would just move a little bit slower over time. And pugs, and I mean a lot of different dogs, have these hip dysplasia issues, and that's kind of, you could see it in him when he was just, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years old. You could kind of see that his hips were just there was a little bit of something, and he's a purebred dog, and purebred dogs tend to just have a little bit more issues sometimes than mutts would have, or dogs that have a few different types that they're made up of. So it was a few weeks ago that I had started thinking, okay, are we like getting to the end? He would have these periods of time where he would have a couple of good days or 3 or 4 really good days. He would have an appetite. He would be a little bit more energetic. He would go after Lucy, who's our younger dog. She's about 1.5 years, almost 2 years. And he just seemed like he had a little bit more energy. And then we would have like a day where he's howling at the bottom of the stairs at 5 a.m. and he doesn't feel like eating and he can't walk more than 10 steps without falling down. So it's just weird. We just kind of would go along and have these several days of good and then 1 day or 2 days of just not good at all. And I started to, like, if you Google dog quality of life, euthanasia, things like that, there's a survey that Ohio State University School of Veterinary Medicine has where it's essentially this, it's a test. You're taking a test about your dog. How much of your dog's life is enjoyable as a dog? And so I would take this thing usually once or twice a week. And over time, the answers would lead much more to like, are you keeping this dog alive for you? Or are you keeping this dog alive for him in this case? So I had floated the notion or talked about the idea of euthanasia to my mom, who is very close with him as well, calls him her grand pug. And she had made this comment to me that really made me upset. And we haven't talked about it yet, and I'll get to why in a few minutes. But she had said that, you know, I hope that if my legs stop working, you won't think about putting me down. And it was just so flippant because the thing is, like, I spend all day, every day with him, and I see this rapid deterioration, which is very different than seeing an animal once a month or once every few weeks for a little bit of time, sometimes 20 minutes, sometimes an hour, sometimes he'd stay the night. And she would say things like, he would just get up in the middle of the night, he'd poop in the middle of the floor, or he would pee in the middle of the floor, or pee on the rug, or something like that. And I would just keep saying, he's in human or in dog years, he's in his late 80s at that point. You know, there's going to be some incontinence issues, and that's just something that you kind of have to deal with. And she would talk about going and getting MRIs done of his spine and, you know, surgeries and getting one of those wheelchair things for his back legs and all that. And I know there's animals out there that have that happen and dogs that have that happen. But one thing that my vet kept reminding me is that the, you know, the essence of a dog, right? Being able to get up and enjoy a lot of things. And it's not just the back legs. It was a lot of lethargy. And they had said that, you know, this is a deterioration of his spine that is working its way north, working its way upward. And so he would have incontinent issues pooping, and then it would be peeing, and then his front legs wouldn't work all that well. And so, you know, do you want to watch a dog just deteriorate like that? And it was really tough to think about for quite some time, several weeks, a month and a half. My back starts hurting a lot about a little less than a month ago. It was about 3 weeks ago. And I, you know, at first I kind of chalked it up to doing certain exercises. And as time has gone on, it's quite clear that that wasn't really the case. Life has been very heavy lately. Barkley's the first dog that I ever adopted. Dickie, I was his stepdad, basically. Jenny had him before we even met. So Barkley, we went and picked him up in May of 2009, picked him up from a farm in Ferndale, Washington, which is, it's one of the towns closest to the Canadian border, just south of Vancouver. So we picked him up. He was the runt. He was the unwanted pug, but so cute. Black pug. You don't see black pugs nearly as often as you see fawn pugs. But I've loved that dog. We've had this just amazing relationship, this very special relationship for so long. We'd go out of town and I'd ask, what is Barkley doing right now? I always had this voice, bark we. That's how I always imagined him talking, was that he would say, not Barkley, but bark we. Bark we. So I would talk about him in that way. So anyway, we were going out of town a couple of weeks ago. And then 3 weeks ago, he started having, it felt like more bad days than good days. So I called the vet, and in the COVID world of the vet, especially where we are in the United States, there is, it's very uptight when it comes to COVID and who can be in certain rooms of certain people. And so the way they've been handling the vet at our vet since COVID started is that you go and you drive your car and you park your car at the vet, and then you call them, then they take your animal inside, they do the exam or whatever it is that needs to be done. They call you, they talk to you, and then they put the dog back in the car. So I was adamant that I didn't want that. I called and said that I wanted a quality of life exam. I wanted the vet to look him over and tell me how, you know, is he in good shape? Again, am I extending this dog's life unnecessarily? Is there, you know, help guide me a little bit. So they said that they were very limited on availability and that I could drop him off in the morning and pick him up sometime late in the afternoon or the early evening. And I had to pause on the vet tech, and I hope that I didn't come off like too much of a jerk, but I had just said that, this could be the last time that he ever comes to this vet. And I've had this dog for 13 years, and I think it's really shitty that you're expecting me to drop this dog off and then get the story through the phone. I want to have like a real exam. And so she quickly backpedaled. She got Dr. Thrum, and they said that I could bring Barkley in and actually have this exam. So we go in, we have this exam. The vet had made some recommendations. He talked about cutting one of his medicines in half, adding another medicine for incontinence. He said it's either going to work great quickly or it's not going to work really at all. And then had us boost up his calories, give him a little bit more, give him some kibble with the wet food I'd been giving him. I've been giving him like white rice and wet food because he likes it and he doesn't have a lot of teeth, and so it might be tough to chew up kibble. So we got him some tiny little kibbles and he really, really liked it. So this was 4 days before we were going to go on vacation. And so we have our house sitter come over. She loves dogs. She's great with dogs. She's giving us updates constantly. So we left 2 Fridays ago, is when we had left for California, and Barkley's doing good and he's eating and things are going well. We're due back on Saturday. So we get a text on Thursday that he's not feeling so, doesn't seem like he's feeling so well. I'd been watching like our security cameras as the week rolled on. So I would see Kelsey pulling him in the wagon, and it was just, God, it was so sweet because she's so good with animals. And this last week, he did all the things that his annoying little sister Lucy, the black lab, got to do. But Thursday, she said it doesn't seem like he's doing too well, and he would only take hand feedings. Then Friday, he doesn't eat at all. So he doesn't eat breakfast, he doesn't eat dinner. And then Saturday, doesn't eat breakfast again. We get home around 4 o'clock that day, and he didn't greet us at the door, which was unlike him. Even when he's slowed down, he greets us at the door nearly every time, and it's really sweet. And we're sitting there watching TV that evening. He didn't eat dinner, by the way. He didn't even want to get up. He was just totally asleep. And we're sitting there, we're watching TV. I think we were watching Yellow Jackets. We're watching a show, some kind of show. And he sat up, and he looked around the room, and he looked at us. And I made a joke to Jenny. I'm like, oh, he's up. And then he laid back down. And I don't think he ever closed his eyes after that. So I get down and I'm petting him. And I wake up the next morning and I go and see him. His eyes are completely wide open. He's not blinking. His heart's beating. I can see him breathing. But his tongue is out. And his tongue is blue, like super light blue, gray, white. It's not like pink or red, like Laffy Taffy, like a lot of dogs' tongues look like. It's, you know, it doesn't look good at all. And Jenny and I were debating that morning at, is this 10 a.m., 10:30 a.m.? Should I take him to the ER? And, you know, again, he's 13 years old. He's kind of at the end of the road. You take him to the ER. Who knows how much they're going to put him through? And then when they put him through all this stuff, he still has back legs that don't work. And Jenny had made a comment that it's the way that he looks right now, it seems like he's like in the process of dying. And that just crushed me. And I think she was probably right. In fact, that vet appointment we had had 2 weeks prior, I had called the in-home euthanasia people, and it was very tough to make that call. I called them and just asked them, what's the typical availability? If I go to this vet appointment and he says he's suffering, what do I do? And they said, usually we can turn it around and be over within 24 hours. So at least I knew that. So we get to this Sunday morning. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning. And he is still the same thing. Eyes wide open, labored breathing, gray or white tongue. And I'm looking at him and he's just staring off into nothingness. There is no, he's not tracking movement. He's not looking at me. He's looking beyond me, past me. And I burst into tears and I was telling Jenny that and it looks like he's dying right now. He's lifeless. You pick him up, he's lifeless. He doesn't move. He doesn't react. It's literally like picking up a sack of potatoes. And I just told her, I said, I don't want him to die at home. And I felt like he was going to die on Sunday. I don't want him to die at home. And I'm going to call the euthanasia people. And I called them. The receptionist who answered the phone quickly called out to the only doctor that was available, or the only doctor that was even could even take an appointment. And I'm trying to get this out to her, what's going on. And I'm crying so hard talking about this. And she comes back on the phone. She says he can come, but it's got to be between 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock. Or else we have to wait till later in the week. And I ran in to tell Jenny and I said, we can do it in an hour or we have to wait for a few days. She'd say, can they give us a little bit more time today? You know, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, whatever. I come back. They said they could not. So that was decision time. I made the call right then and there. And I said, yes, I'm a big believer in dying with dignity. And I told them, okay. And I called my parents. We hadn't talked to them since we got home. And they said, oh, hey, how was your trip? And I just burst into tears again. And I said, we got to bring the kids over now. Barkley's dying today. We're putting him down today. And they understood right away. They hung up the phone. We took the kids over there. We told Zoe first, the older one. She wept in her bed about it. It was so sad because she's known Barkley since she's been born. She's always had him around. So I picked him up in his checkered blanket and I brought him to the car and I held him and I rocked him until we got to my parents' house so they could say goodbye. And again, if you go back to that comment my mom had made a month earlier, I hope you don't put me down if my legs start to not work so well. And I showed her, I wanted her to see, here's the condition he's in. His tongue is white and it's hanging out. He's not blinking. He's not responding to anything. Like, what are we keeping him alive for? She agreed later on that was the right move. So that was good validation. But we brought him home. We got there a few minutes before the vet did. I laid him down in the bed. Vet got there around 12:15 or so. So this was 1 hour after I told them, okay, we're going to do it today. They gave him the sedative, and the doctor kept giving us disclaimers about the sedative that, you know, he might flicker, he might flinch, he might do this. He didn't react at all. We waited 10 minutes. He didn't react at all. It was exact same condition, just like a vegetated state is what it reminded me of. He came back in. He asked if we wanted a little bit more time. And I said, no, let's do it. So just before he gave him the injection, I leaned down and I kissed him on the cheek and I said, I love you, Barkley. And that was it. The vet had said that it seemed like he was very late stage. Like, this is a dog that there's nothing there. And it's just been amazingly hard ever since. Like profoundly hard. I've been to 3 family member funerals. 3 or 4. I haven't cried at any of them. I could not stop crying on Sunday night and all day Monday. And I had meetings with clients of mine, thankfully over Zoom. Some I turned the video on for, some I did not. I was just so scattered. I'd be like trying to present something and I would just get lost in my words, and it's just very hard. And back to my back, having these back spasms over and over and over, over and over. I'd look the wrong way and my lower back would just go into spasm, and I would just crumble onto my desk. Or I had an in-person meeting yesterday and I'm grabbing the railing. We're standing outside a restaurant. I'm grabbing the railing as this is happening, trying to just no-sell it. Having these professional conversations with these people. I don't know if my grief leave or whatever it's called covers animals. It certainly should. Tough week. It's a tough week. So, my back has been killing me, like I said. And I just felt this like real like weight of the world feeling late Sunday night, especially Monday, especially Tuesday, the most on Tuesday. And I want to make sure I get this terminology right. Okay, so that's not correct. I make sure I get the right term. Jenny and I said it to each other earlier today. Where is it at? Intrusive thoughts. I'm not suicidal. I don't have those. That's not it. That's not what I'm trying to convey here. But sort of the weight of the world, when I think about this animal, could I have done more? And I start really questioning, am I doing enough in life in general? And is it all enough kind of thing? Maybe it'd be better without me sort of thing. That's as far as it got. Intrusive thoughts is what it's called. So just like I cannot emphasize enough the weight of 5 million pounds on my shoulders as I'm thinking about all this stuff and this animal that I loved so much. And the cat, she's walking around, she's meowing just incessantly. And then our younger dog, Lucy, who all morning yesterday just laying in Barkley's bed, or all morning on Monday laying in Barkley's bed, not getting up. So, you know, everybody's kind of feeling it in the house. So I'm watching a video from David Hanscom, because I sort of think of him as like the living expert on backs, back pain. He's tremendous. I've interviewed him twice. I want to interview him a third time. But he's talking about expressive writing and the 1,000 or so papers that have been published on it helping with pain, doing expressive writing. And I did expressive writing before I picked the kids up yesterday around 4:30. Set my timer for 20 minutes. I did 15. I had to go. I did it in very journal speak way. So writing a bunch of awful stuff about how angry I am and upset and sad and enraged and all of that, the nasty stuff, the dark stuff. I ripped it up. I threw it away. I mean, within a couple of hours, God, my God, did I feel so much better. Felt so much better. Like that 1 million pound weight on my shoulders was very close to gone. It was a 500 pound weight. My back also felt a lot better. I had a killer workout this morning. I did sprints. I haven't done sprints since last summer, probably. Lots of box jumps, lots of dumbbell clean and jerks. And it's stupid pain and it's still there. But I, you know, having such a dent just from one 15-minute journal session. It's amazing. Nicole Sachs did this challenge about 4 or 5 years ago on her YouTube channel where she said to journal do journal speak every day for 30 days. And I interviewed a couple of people that did that challenge on the podcast in the past. And one of them was completely cured of all of their ailments. They had multiple surgeries just from doing that. So the power of journaling for this, even for this. And it's interesting in talking to different types of people, people that are not dog people. It's almost like I will almost like diminish the death of this animal that I cared about. People that are animal people, you get it. I know you get it. I've gotten a lot of nice messages from listeners that I was thinking about not even publishing this until tomorrow because I wanted one more day to think about it. You know, I want to leave you today with a couple of things that I wrote about Barkley. We called him Bobo. Again, just the world's sweetest pug, which by the way, you know what? I'll just read it. So I wrote this on Sunday. He was the runt of his litter and the only unpicked pug amongst his brothers and sisters. When we arrived at the farm in Ferndale 13 years ago to pick up our new puppy, Barkley, he fought and he beat cancer in 2015 and 2018. And in his last gift of sweetness, he seemingly waited for us to come home from vacation to see him before telling us it was time to cross the Rainbow Bridge. It reminded me of that great final scene between Jim and Michael in the office, where Michael has spent the entire week convincing everyone in the office that his last day was Friday, when in fact, it was really Thursday. I feel as if the faraway look in his eyes this morning was him saying, "Am I doing the right thing?" I had to reply and let him know that he was, and that sometimes goodbyes are a bitch. He lived a fantastic life, and he's been surrounded by love from everyone who has ever met him. I'm heartbroken, but I'm grateful that this sweet boy entered my life at only 23 years old and gave me so many great memories to which I will hold tightly forever. You and Dickie are now finally reunited and doing zoomies on the other side. I will remember you forever. I love you. Good boy. The best boy. So day went by. I wrote another one last night. This one was much longer. And I'll just end with this. I'm 27 and a half minutes in. With this all happening so fast yesterday, spending the last 30 hours reflecting on the sequence of events has really paused me at a lot of moments today. Barkley had been teetering between good days and bad for a couple of months. Finally, about 3 weeks ago, after a couple of days in which he just appeared to have no energy, I called his vet to make a quality of life exam. We all felt that it wasn't quite the end for Barkley at that time, and we were rewarded with about a week and a half longer of a happy pug with an appetite. He lost his appetite on Friday, just about 24 hours before we were due to be home. He didn't eat Friday, nor did he eat Saturday morning or Saturday evening. He was so lethargic that he just laid there in bed sleeping. Jenny and I were on the couch watching TV on Saturday night, and he sat up, he looked around the room, he looked at us, and he laid back down, and I don't think his eyes ever closed after that. It was as if he slipped into a vegetated state. Over the next 12 hours, this only evolved into him laying there and his eyes wide open, his tongue out and his breathing labored. His eyes were open, but he wasn't blinking. He wouldn't track movement and he wasn't making any noise aside from the breaths that I heard. The lights were on, but there was no pug home that I'd known for so many years. It was at 11:15 a.m. that I called the in-home euthanasia vet to make the decision. We told the kids. Zoe wept in a room and I held her and told her how much we all loved him. I picked up his lifeless body and his checkered blanket and took him with us to my parents to drop the kids off. I rocked him the entire way and I watched his eyes. In a 30-minute round trip, he didn't blink one time. At 12:05 p.m., the vet arrived at our house, and our cat Stella, who does not just walk up to strangers, came downstairs and sat between Jenny and I as the vet gave the sedative and then eventually the injection that stopped his heart. I kissed Barkley on the cheek and I told him how much I loved him before he passed at 12:35. It's been such a roller coaster today. I'm trying to work and I have meaningful conversations with customers and just stumble through every sentence. I just am having a hard time grasping how fast this all happened, and more so that he woke up on Saturday night to simply look at us like he knew that we were now home and he wanted us to know that it was okay to let him go. Lucy laid in his bed all morning in Jenny's office and Stella has been walking around meowing continuously since yesterday morning. These animals know that a member of their family is gone. The only way I know how to grieve here is in speech and written word. I apologize if some of the above is hard to read, but it's just what's going on inside. The emotions are incredibly visceral. It feels like a hole in my chest, and I can say without a doubt that if I could have forfeited one of my own years in order to give him back 7 energetic and happy dog years, I would have done that in a heartbeat.